Welcome to Humble Brag. I'm Nate Mendel. I'm sitting out here in beautiful north of Thailand. It is absolutely stunning. I don't know if you can hear, but the birds are chirping, there's a breeze, sun is shining, and pretty much everything in between, nature related. Thailand is a beautiful country with a really nice culture, and it is a great affordable place to travel to and explore when you're in exploration mode. Forgive me if background noise is too much, but some things are just irresistible, and me sitting out here and recording in this absolutely stunning place, miniature resort, that's one of those things. Today I would like to reflect on my previous episode, which was on the topic of anxiety, as I've learned quite a bit and experienced quite a bit since I recorded that, and although it's only been just a few short weeks, it's quite baffling how much I've been through mentally on that particular topic in these past few weeks. And before I lose touch and forget some of the stuff that I experienced and some of the ways in which I felt, I want to get it on video, put it in recording, because that's often what happens. We experience something different, unique, out of the ordinary, and we think we'll be able to talk about it forever, but the truth is we heal, we grow, we move on, and we lose touch and we lose sight of the actual feelings and experiences that we had. So, ironically enough, after I made that previous episode, you know, they say God's humor is crazy, right? So, I record an episode about anxiety, and just a week or so later, I begin experiencing the worst anxiety I've ever had in my life. Imagine that. I'm dealing with anxiety, as I mentioned, since I'm about 15 or 16. Always managed to have it under control to a certain extent. A week after I record an episode about anxiety, I experience the worst anxiety I've ever had. The type of anxiety that debilitates and disrupts your entire life. Now, it is true that everyone's anxiety is different, right? No two fears and phobias and stresses are the same. The things that trigger my anxiety may not trigger you and vice versa, but there may be areas of overlap. And this is more about how we approach the topic and think about some of the details than it is about the particular circumstances. Because if you could learn to analyze the topic as a whole, like holistically, and not focus necessarily on the particular circumstances, I think there's a lot to learn. In other words, I'm doing this as much for me as I am for you. I'm actively exploring this. I'm actively working with my therapist through different ideas. And like I said, before I forget, before I lose touch, before I completely heal and feel healthy and strong again, I would like to get this out here because sometimes the thought process and the rationalizations and everything we do while we're going through the pain and the suffering is a lot more valuable than reflecting in retrospect, right? It's like that age-old classic, the millionaire is giving advice to the pauper. Like, can we hear from the pauper about his struggles? It's the same thing with any achievement, any struggle. It's almost more valuable to hear from people actively struggling than it is to hear from someone who has healed, because the person who has healed, doesn't matter who it is, if I feel much better in 2 months from now, I'm not in touch with the severity of my struggle today, because we become complacent and we are forgetful by nature. Memory forgetfulness is a utility, a very important one, otherwise we would hang on to things. So let's not harp, let's get into it. There are different levels of anxiety. The anxieties that I described in my previous episode, the anxieties that I dealt with for the past 15 years were low to moderate level anxiety. It wasn't always going to panic. I was able to manage it without any medication or substances. I always found natural ways to get it under control, to calm myself down, recenter myself, so on and so forth. As such, I categorize it as a certain level of moderate to easygoing anxiety, because there are more extreme levels of anxiety where people are physically losing control. They're physically having really bad panic attacks. They're running to the hospital. They need to calm themselves down. As such, my anxiety for the past 15 years was more on the lower to moderate end of things. It wasn't always going to panic. It wasn't always completely physical and debilitating. A week or so after I record that, I'm traveling to Florida to a wedding, and there's a lot going on, this, that, and the other, some family-related stuff. Out of nowhere, I start feeling pretty strong panic. I was in the car with my friend, and you know, I'm trying to calm myself down. I try switching the conversation. The conversation itself was a little on the stressful side. You know, I'm just doing all the basics, like, you know, whoa, like, where is this coming from? What's causing this? And basically, that spiraled. It happened again a little later, and it was so severe, leading to panic, that I almost, you know, jumped out of the car. Not while it was moving, just fight or flight. My body just wanted to run. When that level of panic starts kicking in, you feel like your mind is spiraling. You can't slow it down. your body starts panicking. There's a lot of physical sensation from the brain to the body to the heart. Everything starts going crazy. I would just jump out of the car and lay down on the ground. And for some reason, you want to feel grounded when these things are taking place because there's a disconnect. You're not connected to nature. You're not connected to your body. There's a huge disconnect between your heart and your mind. And it's typically the body that brings them together. So this forced me to start digging deep and exploring. Now, if we back up about, let's say, 8 months, somewhere in that range, I had also experienced a really bad panic attack, the worst I've ever experienced in my life. And this is after 5 or 8 years of not having a panic attack. So when I say I have my anxiety and my panic under control, I've solidified it. It's like I have control over my body. I've matured. I stay calm even when there's stress, so on and so forth. After 5 or 8 years, to have a horrible, horrible, absolutely, it was almost like a miniature meltdown. It was almost like a nervous breakdown in a sense. I was collapsing on the ground. But when that happened 8 months ago, there were life events taking place, and it was very easy to connect the dots. I was switching between work, finances were difficult. I was out of my home, staying by someone with my family. There were big life things taking place that made it obvious why all the stress got to me. So the stress builds up, it builds up, you push it down, you suppress it, and eventually it overflows. So then, 8 months ago, very easy to identify why I lost my mind for a few hours. I must add that I was on CBD when that took place. I don't blame the CBD. That kind of put it over the top. You know, people talk about THC. THC, as I mentioned in a past episode, it go both ways. For me, it induces anxiety and panic. I think way too deeply without any substance. If you add substance on top of it, I cannot stop my brain from spiraling into quick and retarded thoughts, negative thoughts, and all types of craziness. I stopped smoking weed almost 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, and my anxiety probably helped me get away from THC. Over the past few years, I was taking CBD here and there just to relax a little bit, and now I can't even touch that either. That's how fragile my brain is, or the brain of someone who's already walking on the edge when it comes to anxiety, stress, and panic. Somebody who's on that edge where they could easily slip into high stress, their body feeling fight or flight, add substance to a brain like that, and boop, you're on the other side. So I will mention that I was on CBD, and that is one of the reasons why it was so intense and it lasted as long as it did. But I don't blame it on the CBD. There were a lot of life events taking place, a lot more than even I mentioned. And therefore, it was easy to say, okay, this is the first time in my life anything like that has ever happened. But things stacked up, and it boiled over, so my brain gave out. Fast forward 8 months, things are in order, finances are okay, we're traveling, we're living a good life, everything feels right. Anxiety kicks in a very different way. Now, it becomes very difficult to identify what the cause is. It's not finances. I don't have any major stresses going on. Nothing large, maybe one or two things that are mediocre in size. There's nothing large that could be really off-putting. So what may be triggering the anxiety? And this is where deeper, much, much deeper levels of exploration had to come in. One of the things I've learned in this journey and about anxiety in general. Now, I understood some of these principles, but there's nothing like experiencing it, right? And this comes into psychology and emotions. When there are things that bother us and we don't express our emotions truly and honestly on an emotional level, not a logical or intellectual level, when there are things that bother us and we don't properly get it out of our system, talk about it or do something about it, it builds up. And I wanted to do this episode with a bottle of water to make it really visual, but I'll just illustrate it without. But picture a bottle of water and a cup full of water. The bottle of water is empty. It's an empty bottle. And you have a cup and somebody hurt your feelings and you didn't properly acknowledge to yourself, maybe to your friend or family or spouse or whatever, how it made you feel. Well, take a little drop and pour it into the bottle. And repeat that every single time you experience anything in your life that is unpleasant, unsettling, something that upset you, something that bothers you, something that was traumatic if we go on even deeper levels. But I'm specifically trying to stick with stuff that's not so big. Because when you start digging deep into your life events or what may be triggering your anxiety, it may be stuff, it may be much smaller, trivial things than you think it is. Like I said, 8 months ago, easy, finances are hard, I'm displaced. So easy to figure it out. What about when things are relatively good and you're happy and things are going well? What do you blame it on then? So I want to specifically focus on smaller things that bother, that we either don't have the emotional intelligence to express, we don't know how to, or we deliberately suppress it, different coping mechanisms, different reasons why we deal with our struggles and pains and suffering the way we do. But think about that. The empty bottle, the cup, and every single time in life, your day-to-day, somebody hurt you, something went wrong, you had an accident, you messed up at work, somebody's bothering you at work. It could be anything, something that actually bothers you and you just suppress it. Every time there's a little drop that gets added. And what happens is, and this is clear as day, these are not just principles, this is what happens to our body. Our body, our physical body stores that discomfort on some type of energy level. I don't understand it myself. And you'll see there's a lot of psychologists that are talking about this. More recently, you hear a lot about what's the therapy type where it's more on a physical, I forgot the term, but there's tapping and touching and physical. And there's a lot of different frameworks for what I'm discussing that explore it in different avenues, but it's essentially all the same thing. Our bodies store in this weird physical, non-physical way our stresses and the stuff that we suppressed. And it's like your body's that empty bottle that slowly fills up and eventually it gives out. And when it gives out, that could often be an extreme anxiety attack. The feeling of disconnect, you're not in tune. Your body, heart, and mind are not in sync. And you could start panicking and all kinds of stuff. Now, this is a very important, very, very important principle when exploring anxiety in general, because understanding that will get you to a healthier place. And if you're in a healthier place, you'll be able to express yourself better. And if you express yourself better and more honestly, the likelihood of reaching these climaxes will reduce. We've discussed in the past the notion that input equals output from every sense. What you heard, what you saw, what you smell, what you eat, it all affects you. And for people who are anxiety prone, and again, when I talk about anxiety, I'm talking about the more extreme side of anxiety, not a little nervousness here and there, this, that, and the other. I'm talking about people who have anxiety that leads to panic. Anxiety that debilitates. When we have anxiety that debilitates, when we have that type of body or mind or whatever, we are more prone to be affected by everything that comes into us, every type of stimulation on any level, whether it's the effects of sugar, caffeine, and food, unhealthy food, or it's something we saw, watched, or heard, or physically gone through, something really scary or bad or terrible. What I just described about the bottle filling up is no different. These are things that are, I shouldn't say happening to us, but they're happening in our presence. We are processing it, and it's filling up the bottle. Okay, so that's one of the large things that really solidified. So what I began to do is dig into, okay, what are some things that may be bothering me or have been bothering me or have bothered me over the past 10, 15 years that I didn't get out of my system? And I just start digging, right? Let's crack open the can. Let's be honest with ourselves. Let me look deeper. And it starts becoming very difficult to identify what doesn't bother you, especially if you're not a very emotional person, which I'm not. I express my emotions with my mouth, not with my body. If I'm sad, I may express that I'm sad, but the likelihood of me crying is low. That's just who I am. And everyone's different. There are people who are more logical and there are people who are more emotional. For emotional people, it's a lot easier. Straight to the emotion. And those types of people are sitting at the therapist and the therapist is telling them not to be so emotional, to disconnect a little bit. And people that are more on the logical side and the less emotional side, they're being told you got to tune in more. But when you start tuning into your emotions, it's not so simple and straightforward. Because if you lived your entire life a certain way and you process circumstances a certain way and things a certain way, or if you've disciplined yourself to be humble and to, you know, Klosenberger Rebbe or wherever that quote comes from, maybe it was Chafetz Chaim, if one word is worth one coin, then staying silent is worth two, something along those lines. There's so many philosophies about disciplining yourself to deal with what's going on around you. You may have become a person that could handle many things, that is great in times of distress, meaning you stay calm and you stay composed. You don't let trivial things affect you, long lines or people cutting in front of you. You have the patience, you stay quiet, you're idle, all of that, right? Combine that with the fact that you're an intellectual, logical person and not an emotional person by nature. Now you want to start touching and tapping into your emotional side. Well, what actually does bother me? The truth is, I have no clue what bothers me. Now, that's not 100% of the time. There are times when things obviously bother a person. My friend hurt my feelings. That bothers me. It just hurts right here. There's no denying it. There's nothing going on up here. It's all here. That hurt me. Yo, bro, please don't do that. That hurts me. Hurts my feeling. Very obvious. But what if things are not so obvious? Like I said, you're standing on a line and somebody cut in front of you. It annoys you, or does it not annoy you? Are you so disciplined that it does? And I'm just using that as an example. But when you come as a logical person that's not so in tune with your emotions, it becomes very confusing to discern what is and isn't bothering you. because this is a new journey. Now you have to learn how to express yourself, because what's the goal here? What am I trying to get at? When things bother you, in order for the bottle not to fill up, we have to get it out of our body. We have to get it out of our system. Whether that means letting the person know, expressing it to someone, talking to a therapist, a spouse, a friend, a confidant of some sorts. You have to get it out of your system, right? So if you need to get it out of your system, you have to be able to identify that it caused the problem in the first place. And that's a very difficult journey. As I get older and I mature more and I'm tapping into more emotional intelligence, I recognize, because I analyze all of this and I see clearly, you know, I'm not that person. And I may be a few months into this journey, but I recognize how many years it would take me to even gain a natural, healthy level of being in touch with what really bothers me. Because I don't even know. I don't know what bothers me. I know big things that bother me, but small stuff, I don't know. And these types of things are journeys, right? You're not going to solve it today, you're not going to solve it tomorrow. But starting to understand the entire framework of how our body stores things and how it relates to anxiety and panic, that is the focal point here. Now, let's go back to the anxiety that I started to feel. This was different than anything in the past. It was even different than 8 months ago, because 8 months ago when I had that meltdown, I was like, whoa, I thought I have everything under control, anxiety and stress-wise. If I can melt down like this at this age, after years of not having any panic, this makes me vulnerable on a whole different level, because like, when's the next time? So the fear of the unknown kicks in. Like, holy crap, this could happen again. This could happen tomorrow. I'm losing my mind, right? That was that. But it was isolated. I woke up the next morning. I felt okay. There were some residual effects of the disgusting and utterly devastating feelings that I had for those few hours of that episode. Complete and utter dread on every level imaginable, so on and so forth. Anyone who's had really bad panic and anxiety knows those feelings. You can't even explain it or give it over in words when you're not actually experiencing it. And when you're experiencing it, you're bugging out on such a level that you can't even talk. So it essentially never really gets relayed. Only people who experience it really know how bad it is. Horrible. Worse than dying. Worse than dying. Just put me out. Just give me a pill. Put me to sleep. It's so bad. So horrible. The worst feelings on planet Earth. But it was isolated, just like everything in the past 15 years related to my anxiety. I start feeling stressed. My brain sometimes spirals. I can't calm it down. Spirals a few minutes, a half hour, an hour, a few hours. A few hours is already a really bad episode. What happened this time is it triggered something in my head that not only had the anxiety and the panic, I started having physical sensations all up in my brain that I still feel until today. Happens to be today. Last night, I started feeling better than I have for the entire past month, which may be why I'm recording. I would not be able to record if I was having the bad headache that I'm now describing. It's debilitating, completely debilitating, but I'm trying to draw something here. There's the anxiety, the bad thoughts, the panic. Then there's physical sensations that you actually feel. Headaches, migraines. That headache and migraine kind of put like a cloud. It put me into a tunnel, a cloud that didn't leave me for weeks. And that's something I've never had. So there's anxiety that is isolated, and then there's anxiety that consumes you, similar to the way that deep, deep depression consumes you, right? Because depression is not 1 hour, 30 minutes. It's not an isolated event. Bad chronic depression consumes your entire mind. There's that disconnect. So anxiety, for the first time I felt, couldn't do the same thing. Now, I don't call it depression because there's no suicidal thoughts. I'm not sad about life. I'm not none of the feelings that come with depression. This was anxiety, existential-related anxiety, just fear-based anxiety, unknown, disconnect, something's my body, all that stuff. So just pure anxiety, but it consumed me. That means I went to sleep feeling horrible after feeling horrible the entire day, and I woke back up feeling horrible, and it just continued day after day after day. It was so bad that I needed to try something. Like, nothing's working, right? I'm doing all the lightweight stuff, all the basic stuff, the deep breathing, cold plunges, putting my feet up. And it's not like I'm working and they're stressed. No. I tuned out from everything. I archived every group. I'm not talking to anyone. I need to just focus on me and heal. Work, I put 90% of my work responsibilities on the side. I had less than 1 hour of work a day. I couldn't work. It was all me. All that lightweight stuff didn't solve the problem. That consumption, the way that it consumed me, that level of anxiety was there, and it was there to stay. I'm still dealing with it until today. I haven't yet gotten out of it, but it's been slowly getting better since it started, I don't know, 4 or 5 or 6 weeks ago. Maybe it'll drop more. Literally right after I made that other episode. So it's been getting better, but it consumed me for weeks. So bad that for the first time in my life, I need medication. I need anything. It needs to stop. It must stop. It's that bad. I cannot go through another day, another hour like this. So I go to the doctor. Now, they don't have any history of me having anxiety. I never spoke to a doctor about my anxiety. And if I did, it was maybe in passing when I was really young. But no, there's no history of me with anxiety. So I come in as a 30-year-old telling them that I'm losing my mind. My entire life is disrupted. I can't focus. I can't play with my children. I'm fucked. I need help. The doctor just sees somebody who's trying to pick up painkillers or whatever. And she's like, you know, I can't help you. I could prescribe you to anxiety medicine, which takes 2 weeks to start having an effect. But I can't give you Klonopin or Xanax or anything. Like, I don't know you and you have no history. So that was a letdown, right? Because for somebody in my situation, at my age and with my circumstances, to even go to a doctor in the first place is a very hard thing to do. It's like you really have to muster up everything. Okay, fine, I'll go to the doctor, right? So you finally do it. You break through and then they don't help you. So that sucked, but I was trying to do it the right way. Now, I have other friends who are dealing with anxiety and they recently picked up Klonopin. So I knew I had backup. So I take one or two from my friend, and come Saturday, it's Friday night, Shabbos, and I'm like, I'm going to try this. And I know I don't have a good history with substances. They usually bug me out even more. My body's very sensitive. I hate the side effects of them. But this was so bad that I'm willing to do something that I know I hate to try to relieve the suffering. I try a half a Klonopin, and sure enough, it gets worse, the anxiety, because I'm anticipating the substance kicking in and what it's going to do to me and all this stuff. And then eventually, finally, you know, it does its work, and it calms me down a little bit, sedates me, because that's what these things do. They calm your heart rate and all that stuff. But it didn't really help anything whatsoever. Did not help. It did not help the anxiety. It did not help the thoughts. It did not help the cause. None of it. So what I was talking about in my previous episode about, you know, running to drugs, it's all real. And every time I try a drug to relieve myself of the pain, it doesn't work out for me. Now, for other people, they're not that sensitive to substances. They're not that in their mind about it, so they like what it does to their body. But I saw it clear as day. It was disgusting. And it didn't solve anything. It doesn't solve anything. The next day, you need another one. So after that half a Klonopin that I took, no. And by the way, Klonopin or benzodiazepine, like Xanax, Klonopin, Valium, all this stuff that they're giving for anxiety, they are horribly addictive on one of the worst levels. You could listen to conversations. Jordan Peterson was on it, and he almost died trying to detox. Some very large names have, you know, that doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. The point is there's millions of people on this stuff, and it's horrible, right? I've said this in the past, and I'm saying it now again, even though I experienced the worst or close to the worst, and it was so bad that I had to take one. It's not a solution. It solves nothing. And if you really get on it on day to day, it gets you addicted. It solves absolutely nothing, completely nothing. It solved nothing. It's just a dependency. Now, again, if you're having extreme panic and you need to calm your heart rate, sure, sedate yourself. But this notion that you're just going to sedate yourself over and over every single day, that's not a solution. Anyway, I'm trying to go through the journey of what I experienced. This was a weekend. It was so horrible. I couldn't continue. Anyway, I kept going, pushing another day. And it did slowly start subsiding. I was identifying different things that may be bothering me. I started reaching out to some people who I've had interactions or altercations with or of some sorts in the past to see if there's anything unresolved there. Just digging up some old stuff, seeing like what could possibly be there so deep down that it needs to come out. Tried that. Learning how to be more honest with myself and my emotions. So if there's something bothering me today, during my day, my day-to-day, my hour-to-hour, let it out. Like identify it, be real with it. Acknowledge it to myself and let it out, right? Not let the body build up so that it overflows. Talking to my therapist about the nuances of the anxiety and getting clarity, it's essentially a disconnect, heart-mind disconnect. When we feel at peace and at ease, our heart and our mind are in unison. When there's a disconnect, one of the things that could bring it back together is the body. So you have the mind, you have the heart, and then the body. The body is like the glue. But because I experienced this type of anxiety that doesn't go away, it's day after day, stress after stress, and it's just not leaving, and it's so bad that I can only work 1 or 2 hours a day, it opened up my mind to a whole nether, deeper like level of anxiety that is so much worse. And with this type of anxiety, you have to take it easy. You have to be kind to yourself, because what happens is you start feeling a drop better. All right, so let me start working. Let me start putting in 5-8 hours a day. I need to get back to my responsibilities. And you can't do that. You have to understand that this level of deep and bad anxiety could take months to recenter yourself. It could take months to get back to where you need to be. And understanding that and being kind to yourself on that level without rushing things, it's like, yeah, you need a mental health break. You need a break. Now, it worked out well for me because we were planning to come to Thailand and with work and a couple different circumstances that worked out really well. The timing worked out really well. I don't have huge responsibilities right now. I'm able to upkeep what I do need to from Thailand. There's a huge time difference. So this is like, okay, I'm out in the jungle. Let me get back to what I need to. And some of the stuff that I began to explore, and this all ties into this, is related to what we value, what makes us feel at peace and at ease. If we're saying that there's an aspect of a disconnect, the heart and the mind, let's think back to a time when there wasn't a disconnect, right? Let's think about that for a moment. Because there probably was a time in your life when you did feel good. You were at ease. Let's think back to that time. How old were you? What were your ambitions then? And what changed since then? If you're having horrible anxiety today and you didn't have it then, what's the difference? And I began to explore that thought process. And that's one of the things that I've come to notice. If by nature I'm more of a logical and intellectual person and I have a hard time tuning into the deep emotion of things, if I'm like that by nature and I'm actively trying to work on tuning into what's going on down here and tuning this out a little bit, what am I feeling? Maybe the issue is that I am too much up here. And if I go back to a time when I wasn't so much up there, what was different? Why was I more connected? Why was the glue there? Why was my heart and mind working well together and now it's not? So for me, and I'm just going to use myself as an example, as I have been, but you can think about this in your own life. There was a time in life where that glue, that connection, was very unified. And it was probably between the ages of 18 and 22, when I was very interested in certain healthy behaviors and activities, from martial arts to meditation to the consumption of a ton of spiritual work and working on myself, self-help, and all kinds of stuff. What happened since then? Well, what happened to me happens to everyone. You grow up, you get married, you have children, responsibilities, and then business. And that gradually, it's out of your control, consumes you. All of a sudden, you start giving up some of your interests, your healthy interests, yoga, stretching, the gym, this, that, the other, right? And this begins to take place, and you begin to be more and more consumed by business. Achievement in the realm of intellectualism and creativity and everything that requires the logical brain, everything that requires this to work really hard. And you achieve goals and you're on top of the world, so on and so forth. But what's happening during that journey is that you're slowly becoming disconnected from the things that you really valued and that you really loved and the things that created the glue in the first place. How often do I talk to God? How many minutes a day do I talk to God? How many minutes a day do I reflect, take stock, introspection? How many minutes a day am I working out, staying physical, staying active? Not even close to what it was. You don't think there's a correlation? If you don't think there's a correlation, you're wrong. Because I will say this. There's something very simply that you could do right now to solve your worst anxiety. Go on a 15-mile hike. The likelihood of you having bad anxiety and panicking when you're walking the Appalachian Trail is slim to none. I'm saying that to point out something. There are physical stuff we can do to remove ourselves from the situation that we're in and not feel the way we feel. And I know this. And I also know the laziness that comes along with knowing that. I know that when I'm having the worst experience of my life, I could leave my house, go do an activity that will 100% remedy it, at least for the time being, and I will not feel that way, yet I don't go and do it. Why not? Because as we get older, we get lazier, and it's difficult, right? Life's good things are difficult to achieve, to do. But my point is, I knew when I was younger that the physical activity was healthy, and I desired it. I was intrigued by it. I was young. I was exploring. It was like, imagine I could achieve being strong and doing this and doing that and doing a full split and all this stuff. And then you get older, and you know what? You start imagining. Imagine I had $1 million. Imagine I have a huge house. Imagine I build a second business. Imagine I'm successful. All the things that you cared about, valued, and imagined, they kind of fall by the wayside. Now, if you ask me intellectually, sure, I'll tell you I value spiritual living and I value meditation. Value it from today till tomorrow. Are you doing it? And what happens on the journey of life, especially the first 5, 10 years of marriage at this age, you get consumed by the pursuit of success, monetary success, because you feel like you have to feed your children. You have to put bread on the table. You have to do it. You don't feel like you have a choice. You feel like there's absolutely no choice. You have to pursue that. But when you pursue that year after year and you slowly move away from the things that you actually valued, here's your heart, what you're living with, and here's your mind. And it's a derailment. So if you go back to what we were talking about earlier, where there's a complete disconnect, heart and mind, and the body has to bring it back together, because you're here, your mind, you're 10 years in. 15 years in, you're here. 20 years in, you're here. My body gave out after 10 years or 8 years. Your body might give out after 15 or 20. But at some point, that disconnect is too big. You have a meltdown, a breakdown, a huge panic attack. You feel like you have mental health issues. You need a psych ward, right? Understanding that and understanding the importance. It's so unfortunate, but this is, you know, my therapist asked, what's the benefit? What's the positive of the anxiety? And initially I answered nothing, because when I have it, all I want to do is not have it, right? So it's only negative in a certain sense. But then I understood that the therapist was asking, I believe, in a more holistic place, like, what's the benefit? Like, how will it make things, how will it improve things? And then I'm like, oh yeah, for sure. Well, the benefit is that it forces you to make healthier decisions, right? You can stuff your face with ice cream when the sugar is not affecting you. But when you're having anxiety and panic and that sugar is just making it worse, oh, well, now you have no choice. You can't eat ice cream. So anxiety at these worst levels are, unfortunately, Rav Laser in Breslau, I would say, turn to God before the tribulation. If you turn to God before the tribulation, there won't be a tribulation, right? And that's a concept. Unfortunately, we don't listen until we're smacked in the face. And it appears that that's how life works. But if we could take the importance of this and understand that we need to listen beforehand, don't wait till it gets worse. That's Nate's problem. Oh, you think it's my problem? Okay. So ignore your emotions for another 10 years and come tell me that it was my problem. That's the problem here. We hear the information, we just somehow disassociate and think, yeah, it's not going to happen to us. It's always the other person. The other person has mental health issues. The other person's struggling. The other person has phobias. The other person. And then it hits you. And you're like, what the actual F? I am that person. I was ignoring. I wasn't tuned in. So in this new journey of tuning in deeper, this is what it looks like. Just getting more real. I will add one more thing before I cut this off. In the worst panic, the worst dread, and I experienced a lot of that in the past month, the most profound thing that you can do and that I've done is very, very deep levels of acceptance and trust. When I start experiencing panic and it raises my heart rate and I freak out, and then eventually I calm myself down, and then I feel exhausted from that trauma, from that experience. I then ask myself, what's the point in panicking? I don't run to drugs. I get through it myself. So why should I panic? So you might think it's retarded to rationalize all this stuff, but the only way to accept emotionally is to use your brain. Why should I panic if I'm going to get through it and I'm just going to feel exhausted? What's the point? I know I have the utilities, the prowess, and the tools, and the emotional health and maturity and stability to get through this. I've gotten through it 10 times in the past month. What's the point in panicking? And when you understand that, you could stop yourself from panicking. And if you can control it, your mind starts spiraling and then it leads to panic. Deep levels of acceptance that you're okay. You're not gonna die. Your body will get through this. And I know, trust me, I know how disgusting it feels when you panic. It's actual fight or flight. Your body wants to run. You want to throw up. It's so disgusting. You feel like you're going to die. It's worse than death. When it happens over and over, there is still a mental capacity to firmly establish this notion of acceptance, deep, profound acceptance. You accept what you're going through. You accept that you acknowledge and you feel that it's horrible and all that stuff. You're here to live with it. You're not trying to change anything, do anything. You will get through it. And I don't know, my entire life until today, I've been able to get through it. I didn't have to go to hard drugs or anything in between. So I have no reason to believe that it doesn't work. If I find myself in a psych ward, then maybe I'm wrong. But as of today, and for the past 15 years of just deep levels of spiritual acceptance, helps your body get comfortable and get used to the fact that you are safe, you are okay, and you can get through it. Anyway, I hope some of this information could be helpful to you if you're going through. And if you are, know that you're not alone. You and hundreds of millions, if not billions, of others are going through the same or similar. And I wish you a ton of luck. Peace and love.
Leave a like and subscribe. Subscribe.